I am joined by original guest, Sean Kesa.
Hey, thanks for having me.
Thank you for walking 10 feet into my room.
Yeah. I know this isn't what you wanted.
You know, originally we had a nice, oh man, what, 3-hour talk?
Yeah.
About Halloween 3, Season of the Witch, and The Exorcist 3. We got about 42 minutes of that recorded, which was great. We lost it right after I described the plot of the movie.
But you can find that on the Patreon.
Yeah, it's don't threaten that. I should start a Patreon because I'm poor. I'm going to start charging our fans to listen to this. First of all, I do want to talk about just why you wanted to come on for this episode, because you are one of my best friends. You're a very talented director, and you are the guy that I pay utilities to every month. But so you get to hear me recording in here every week, and then me editing for hours on out. So,
and I love it, man. Honestly, like,
I can't get enough of it.
Listening to you work motivates me to continue to do the things that I want to do when I'm not working. And
listening to me have a nervous breakdown.
I appreciate
when
all the editing. Yeah, dude, everything.
When I lose a piece of it, or
when you have a meltdown, it's
inspiring.
It 100%.
It means that I'm doing okay.
Yeah.
This guy's having a breakdown.
When you're messing up, I'm at my best. What do you mean it's not recording?
But you're a big fan of horror. Is that your favorite genre, you would say?
Maybe. I would say, yeah, between that and science fiction, which I feel like Halloween 3 has a healthy balance of both.
Yeah, it bridges the two really nicely.
I think so. A lot of people hate it.
A lot of people do hate it. I mean, like, there's a lot of fans of the series that hate it. There's a lot of critics that obviously hate it, which is why we're talking about it. That's, I think, what makes it so special in a way, because it obviously also does have a huge cult following from over the years.
It's definitely benefited over the years.
Yeah.
Because, you know, if you go off of, like, box office numbers and, you know, fans' reactions to walking into a theater and leaving asking yourself, where's Michael Myers?
Where's Michael?
Could be a huge Michael.
Yeah, I mean, this was the only one that I hadn't seen in the franchise. Weirdly, well, we talked about. I couldn't remember if I had seen Curse or not the Curse, the Return.
The Return.
Which, because there was the fourth and the fifth one, which are back to back, and I think I kind of combined them in my head. I don't really.
It's almost a rehash of the first one.
Right. You've made two really great short films. Both of them are horror.
That's really nice of you to say.
No, they're awesome. I love your stuff. You have a very unique perspective on the world and a very fucked up sense of humor that I think has bonded us over the years.
I wonder what Rotten Tomatoes would think of my...
Of Words with Strangers?
Words with Strangers.
36%, baby. But it would have a great, you know, it would have a great user rating. This one has a fucked up user rating, actually, I realized. But we should talk about... Let's talk about Halloween 3, Season of the Witch, and give our listeners a little bit of a plot background.
You don't really know much about Halloween. Halloween. The barriers will be down between the real and the unreal. And the dead might be looking in. The last great one took place 3,000 years ago, and the hills ran red.
Halloween, the children.
You happen to know anything about this Cochran?
All I can tell you, mister, watch out.
Season.
He's watching you, friend. I guarantee you that.
Trick or treat. Trick or treat.
Hey, Mr. Cochran, just what is the final process?
Fellas, I was just kidding.
Witchcraft. To us, it was a way of controlling our environment.
Hey!
Where are they taking her?
They're taking her to the factory.
I do love a good joke, and this is the best ever. A joke on the children. I'm glad you'll be able to watch it.
You've got to believe me!
They're going to kill us.
The world's going to change tonight, Doctor. Happy Halloween.
Stop it!
Halloween 3, Season of the Witch. The night no one comes home.
So perhaps the most enduring horror franchise of our lifetime, I would say. The Halloween movies reinvigorated the teen slasher film in ways no one could have predicted, while also lining the pockets of John Carpenter for several lifetimes. Halloween, Season of the Witch, is famous or infamous for a few reasons, but most of all, it's because this is the only Halloween entry to not feature the unkillable pimp himself, Michael Myers. So handing the directing reins over to frequent Carpenter collaborator Tommy Lee Wallace, after deciding that the franchise could operate as something of an anthology series with different stories revolving around the holiday itself, the third installment traded in Myers for corporate witchcraft and Jamie Lee Curtis for a drunk, womanizing doctor. Taking place during the week leading up to Halloween, the film follows Dr. Daniel Chalice, played by Tom Atkins, who drops everything, including his wife, children, and medical practice, to fuck a grieving young woman named Ellie, who is searching for answers in the bizarre death of her father under Dr. Chalice's watch. So going off the only clue they have, a strange Halloween mask Ellie's father was clutching as he was admitted to the hospital, they embark on a trip to a sleepy Northern California town where they trace the mask's origins to Silver Shamrock Novelties, a suspiciously popular company that also seems to be fueling the town's economy. But things aren't as they seem, as the lucrative toy maker Conal Cochran is planning to exterminate millions of children on Halloween by utilizing an ancient Celtic ritual by way of corporate advertising. As time runs out, the fate of the nation's children lie in the hands of the boozy doctor and the woman he's hell-bent on fucking.
That was beautiful.
That's Halloween Season of the Witch, which... I don't have my lovely co-host here to ask me what the score is, so I'll tell you what the score is. It's hovering just above the 40 percentile at 41%, which is actually better than most of the Halloween sequels.
I think most of the movies I enjoy are 40% and below anyway.
So. If it's under 40, I'm in. This is for me.
I'm the target audience for movies like this.
You're not somebody who gives a fuck what critics think in general. You're not somebody that I've ever heard say, like, well, you know, what kind of reviews did it get? It's fun to watch things with you because you don't have a kind of predisposition or, you know, pre-existing idea of what the movie might be. You don't like to read about spoilers or watch trailers and things like that. You know, you're the only guy I know with a Shudder account. You'll watch anything on Shudder, which is great.
It's a write-off.
But yeah, I mean, like...
When I watch a film, especially something like this, I first watch the film as is... You know, I try not to watch anything beforehand. I do all my homework afterwards.
Right.
Because I do like to get different perspectives on things. I do enjoy and appreciate the way people can either tear apart a film.
Right.
Which then allows me to dive deeper into why they feel the way they do.
Sure.
Why do people dislike this movie so much? To me, when I watch a movie like this... It's an original piece.
Sure.
And when it comes to anything Halloween themed, I do think that this stands alone as something that's very special. And it's not this same formula, so to speak.
Right.
To me, this is a movie that don't have to... All the, like, the subtext is not really important to me. But as a viewer, you know, I do enjoy the fact that I could just unwind and watch this movie and have a great time.
I was definitely caught off guard because this was my first time watching it. I was caught off guard by how absolutely scummy Tom Atkins' character is in this. Just because it was hard to piece apart where creatively they stood on the character and acknowledging how just kind of like relentlessly scummy this dude was. You know, when talking about like subtext with this movie, I think the most interesting thing to me is that like this is a great film. And to me, it's a great example of something, you know, where you can choose to turn your brain off and just enjoy it for what it is, which is just this kind of rad, very retro, lo-fi oddity in the Halloween franchise. Or, you know, you can enjoy it for what it is, but also delve into the politics that are kind of underlying it, because I think a lot of Carpenter films do have that and are definitely reflective of their era, but it doesn't mean that you have to choose one or the other. And I think that's kind of the brilliance of the horror genre, is that you can be intelligent while seemingly on the surface being not very intelligent. I know that's a very silly way to put it, but like it's very digestible for mass audiences and people who just love the genre. But at the same time, you can watch it and pick it apart, not even in a way of like scrutinizing the so-called like flaws in the movie, but to be like, man, this is really interesting. This movie, it's really the first Halloween of the 80s, of the Reagan 80s, and an era that became so just obvious, so defined by consumerism and by this need to have all of these things and just excess wealth and excess in everything. And the movie itself is interesting because it feels like it's commenting on that in its own way. And it's also commenting on what, you know, we have now, which is just these franchises that we keep fucking just
doesn't stop.
Yeah. It's interesting that this movie does divert from the usual Michael Myers concept of the genre while still acknowledging it by having like the original Halloween playing on the background in TVs at bars and things like that. And then people just rejected it because they were like, well, fuck this. Where's Michael Myers? And we're not really picking up on, you know, I think what works so well about the movie. To me, it's like, it's kind of just, you know, maybe it's maybe not as effective or great in my opinion, but like, I think you can kind of place it with a movie like RoboCop, which comes later in the 80s, as a commentary on that era. Just the kind of corporate
overlords.
Yeah, exactly. Which we're still dealing with today. And these movies feel kind of ahead of, those movies both feel very ahead of their time in their own way. Because once again, RoboCop is the epitome of a movie that's like, fuck yeah, you can just watch that shit and have a great time. And you can also watch it and see it as a critique of American culture made by a fucking Dutch filmmaker who's like, you guys are fucking stupid. You know, that's why I do like watching films with you, because you are, you know, a curious person, but you're not somebody that overanalyzes things in a really pretentious way or in a way that feels unnecessary. But I guess, you know, like, what is it about the horror genre, and especially, I guess, the Halloween movies that you've been drawn to?
For one, I guess ever since I was a little kid, practical effects has always been something that was so just mesmerizing.
Sure.
To, like, you know, I've watched behind the scenes of most of the films that I've watched, and I appreciate it as a, like, you know, like a, on a production standpoint, like, the time and effort that they put into, like, every little detail, you know, that pumpkin mask was made just for the film. And there's a shot in the film where they're doing the tour through the factory.
Yeah, I love that. When they show the masks.
And they actually saved money by doing that because that's the actual factory where they made the masks.
Oh, that's funny. Okay, so that's really cool. Yeah.
So I thought that was great. And it's just like little things here and there that like I'm just like a sucker for.
Yeah, because you did a lot of practical stuff for the two shorts that you did, because I know we both have financed our own short films out of our pocket, you know, working our very low paying jobs. And you know, I always love the stuff that you do, because you put so much time and energy into creating these types of practical effects in your own stuff. And I definitely think that because we grew up at the same time in like the 80s and in the 90s and growing up with films that were, you know, so much more reliant on practical effects, I don't even think it's a nostalgia thing necessarily. Like, obviously that's a part of it where it kind of does remind you of stuff from when you're growing up, but also because of just how excessive CGI has become, you know, it's kind of ruined a lot of these types of films, I think.
There are times where it takes me like straight out of the movie.
Yeah.
You know, you watch a movie like Freddy vs. Jason and they have CGI blood and it's like, is that really necessary?
Right. And that, it's funny because that we watched that and Bones together, and those were both movies that were kind of at the, kind of right in the middle of the kind of boom of CGI and studios and directors like clearly being like, oh fuck, we can do this, oh cool, let's try that. Yeah. Now, but it still has practical effects in it, in like these, you know, kind of rad makeup effects, so you see in both those movies like, oh man, that's really cool, but then at the same time it's kind of meshing with this horrible CGI where you're like,
yeah, they're kind of blending both in a way where it's like at some point you may think, is this whole movie going to be, is every effect going to be
right.
CG? I think practical effects are a little bit more effective visually.
Yeah, because even when they're fakes, even when they're clearly fake, sometimes there's something still that doesn't necessarily take me out of it.
There's just an appreciation for that.
Yeah.
I see that his face is just latex. I get that. But it's just so rewarding.
There's something about the craftsmanship that goes into, whether it's like when you watch old Carpenter films, like not only like practical effects, but also just like the miniatures and the sets and things like that that they build.
Dude, it's magic.
It's great.
It really is. And you have artists like Tom Savini and Rob Bottin. The best, I mean, the thing is, by far the best, in my opinion, the best film ever.
Thing's incredible, yeah.
You just can't recreate those.
Yeah.
I mean, they try to do it with that prequel. And then you watch how they are made, and you're like, oh, wow, this is actual practical effects.
Right.
But then they add layers and layers of CGI. It's just not the same feeling for me.
Yeah.
You know, some films still hold on to that tradition
right.
of keeping everything practical. I know there's a film, I don't know if it was 2016, but The Void.
Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah. I remember The Void. Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Everything was practical.
Right.
It was, I thought it was great.
Yeah.
You know, and those are the movies I'll rewatch for those scenes.
Yeah.
Because they, in a way, it's realistic.
Sure.
And you get to see that.
We should talk about Tom Atkins' character, which is definitely something that we had a lot of really... We got some good laughs out of him when we were talking about him last week in the first recording. But Tom Atkins plays Dr. Daniel Chalice, who seems to just be completely checked out of life. He seems to be the only like practicing doctor at this hospital. He's sexually harassing the women that he works with.
Yeah, if that was my doctor, I'd probably switch over to somebody else.
So in the movie, he is divorced, technically. It's not very clear, though, in a lot of ways until afterwards when you read about it, because it does seem like he's just an absentee father who likes to go to the bar and drink.
Right, right. And even when, you know, that initial scene where he walks in to his ex-wife's house and the children are there, right. He still doesn't please the children with the gifts that he brings.
He's like, I brought you some masks.
Yeah, and you're like, well, if this is not Silver Shamrock, I don't want this plastic crap.
Yeah, we became so dependent on things and physical actions and, or, you know, physical acts of love or whatever by, you know, our people giving us things, like which this movie is definitely kind of interrogating and taking to task, I think, in a really fun way.
Like I said, I'm guilty of that. You know, there was one Christmas where my brother got the dopest toys and we had just gotten a family computer and I got all computer games.
Yeah.
And like, I started crying on Christmas. And then I saw how upset my mom was. And I was like, I am never going to act like this again. That is fucking terrible.
Yeah.
To go out of your way to spend all this money, which are probably more expensive than the toys itself.
Right.
Only for your kid to be in tears because the younger brother got all the cool shit.
Fucking idiot.
And I got
mom.
Toy Story on PC. And I'm like... And I still bring it up to my mom. I'm like, that was the best Christmas, Mom. Don't worry about all the tears I shed that morning.
Well, hopefully we all have those, you know, moments at one point when we're kids where we're like, oh, fuck, I'm a brat. What am I? You know what I mean?
Yeah,
you see how, you know, just the shit that your parents do for you when they don't have money, especially just to make you happy. I mean, it's crazy.
I mean, I'm not going to compare my parents to Dr. Dan.
No. There you go, son. Yeah, well, yeah, getting back to Dr. Dan, I mean, the guy seems to not really... He's definitely more invested in his side piece at the hospital and his new side piece, which is the grieving daughter of a man who died under his watch.
Yeah,
so they go to, Santa Mira? Is that it?
Yeah, Santa Mira, which is a reference to Invasion of the Body Snatchers.
That's right.
It's the same.
It's the original one. It's from the 50s. Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Same town, yeah.
And there's obviously the parallel of this movie kind of having its own form of...
It's an open ending as well, where at the end of Body Snatchers, you know, this guy's running around screaming that you're next and they're coming to get you and they're taking over.
Right, right.
He's banging on all these cars and no one cares. You know, no one cares.
Shut up.
And I'm sure by the time they do, it's too late. But the fact that you have Dr. Dan calling in on these TV stations.
Right.
Demanding, which is surprising to me, is that two out of the three stations actually listen to him.
Yeah. That was always the question is how does he... He just knows the number to call this place. He's like, I know what I got.
911?
I need you to connect me to every news network in the nation.
ABC News?
Turn it off!
Can you imagine if that was the case now? Anytime you didn't...
Yeah.
He's calling in every station?
Yeah. The funniest thing is that, yeah, so he goes to this woman, Ellie, who is literally half his age, could be his daughter, and she finds him in a bar, right?
Yeah, yeah, and the first thing she says is, they told me I'd find you here. So it's like, what kind of reputation is
doctor in the middle
guy?
Of the day?
Yeah. Well, he's an on-call doctor who's an alcoholic, and I'm sure his job is very stressful, so I'll give him the benefit of the doubt.
So she finds him at the bar, and then he immediately is like, let's investigate your dad's death. And he calls his wife or ex-wife or whatever, because it's supposed to be his weekend with the kids. And he immediately calls her from a payphone, and he's got a fucking six-pack on the top
Dude,
of the payphone already.
Ready to go.
He left the bar, and he's already got a six-pack, and he's like, yeah, I can't see the kids this weekend. Something's come up at work.
Yeah. And she goes, where are you? Where are you calling from? He's like, I don't remember the name of the hotel. I gotta go.
Yeah, and then they immediately, like, he drives into this town with this chick. They drive in, and, like, within 5 minutes, they see a motel, and he's like, well, I think we should check into a motel.
Yeah, they both notice that. They're driving through this small town, and every single person in that town is just gazing at this car driving in, because they know they don't belong there. And for a company that's, like, huge...
Yeah.
No one questions the fact that they're under, like, hardcore surveillance. Like, they're okay with that. There's no...
Yeah, I mean, it's kind of...
explanation as to why.
Well, it's another thing that kind of, I think, ties into that era, too, where it's like
We're watching.
We're accepting these things. We're groomed to accept this, and we're groomed to feel safe because of it. And even the way, like, it's you know, it's crazy that, like, they, you know, they discover that Connell Cochran is like, this apparently self-made, like, rich dude, which also kind of ties into the era of us, like, obsessing over people and their self-made wealth, or, you know, so-called self-made wealth.
Jeff Bezos.
Yeah, when really it's like they're, you know, he's literally profiting off of the blood of children, which is, like, taking the literal idea of what corporations were doing. And like the family that takes the tour of the factory is, like, so enamored with him. They're like, he really earned all this.
Oh,
and
yeah, they're obsessed with him.
Yeah, they're like, wow, which is so fucking funny. I think, like, that's my favorite part of the movie, is everything at the factory, everything involving Shamrock. But then, yeah, you have this crazy subplot where the protagonist is essentially just a fucking...
He's scum.
He's a scumbag doctor, alcoholic.
But they go, it's so natural, though.
It's just, Tom Atkins looks like that guy. He's like, perfect. So clearly a guy that should never have been the leading man in a movie. Like, this is the only era he could be a leading man, is, like, the late 70s, early 80s.
Yeah.
There was no other time when that guy was not going to be a bit player in a movie.
Yeah. Every interview I've watched with him for Season of the Witch.
Yeah.
He always says, I don't know what kind of doctor I'm supposed to be.
He has no
clue. Whatever doctor he was, I think he knocked it out of the park.
People like me. I'm really well respected. When they go to the hotel too, they, like, immediately, within, like, a few minutes, they show up at this hotel, which is just, like, chaos.
Yeah.
It's run by, like, this fucking, an Irish caricature of, like, a leprechaun. Town. This movie hates Irish people. This movie hates Irish people so much. Like, I kind of started to suspect it, and then as soon as the motel manager shows up, and it's like, welcome to me motel! Yeah. You're like, this is crazy.
He gets this idea to get a motel is because, you know, we need to talk in private, we need to plan this out. Meanwhile, I don't know how long the drive was to Northern California to Santa Mira, but they had the whole drive to discuss what they were going to do. Yeah. And then they pull up to the town, and Ellie's like, I don't know what to do, we need a plan.
They drove all the way there. He probably crushed the six-pack on the road and was like...
He didn't even
share it. Wait. Yeah, he sees...
You thirsty? They get the hotel room, right? And after, you know, he's, like, zigzagging through all these people that just, like, come out of nowhere all at once. And he slams the door and he goes...
It turns into, like, a scene from, like, Uncut Gems when he's outside the motel where just everyone's talking
over
each other.
It's the most chaotic scene.
Yeah, everyone's got, like, a crazy Irish accent. It's like, what the
You have
fuck?
The Willy Wonka family coming in. Yeah, so then...
He comes back into the motel and he's like, this place is a zoo. He's, like, in shock.
Yeah, and then the moment she goes... All right, we gotta think of a plan. He goes, I need a drink first. You just crushed six beers, dude.
Yeah, so that means that he definitely crushed the six pack on the way, because he no longer has the six pack. So he goes out and he goes and gets a bottle. Yeah, he goes to a liquor store nearby and, like, gets the bottle in a paper bag. He's literally walking around like the town drunk. He's, like, walking through the back alley of the hotel and he runs into that homeless guy who's like, hey, brother, let me get a sip of that.
It almost seems like a scene from another movie.
Yeah, like this homeless guy comes out of nowhere and this doctor's just like, okay, here you go. Like, gives him the bottle.
The homeless guy comes through the darkness and goes, hey, man, I don't have any diseases. You want to let me have a swig?
Yeah, he prefaces it by saying, I have no diseases.
But that dude did not hesitate for a second.
Hey, just a second. You happen to know anything about this Cochran? Do I know anything? He made Santa Maria what it is today. Dried up a little pile of nothing. Let me tell you something, mister. He brought in every damn one of them factory people from the outside. You think he'd hire me, local boy? No way. Turn me down flat. If you haven't got a dollar, you can spare it, eh? Mm-hmm. Thank you. All I can tell you, mister, is watch out. Seen the TV cameras yet? He's watching you, friend, I guarantee you that.
Hey, Cochran! Fuck you!
It's all right.
Don't matter to me.
It turns out that he's just like disgruntled
silver shit. He's an ex-employee.
Yeah, like he tried to get a job and they were like, no.
Why the fuck not? Well, it seems that the place only employs robots that look like evil members of the Talking Heads. They're right. All wearing these suits and just like have these dead-eyed.
He's wearing the wrong suit to the interview. And
come on, give me a shot. Well, he like lives in a shack outside of the motel, it seems like.
Yeah, for the most part, the town seems like a...
The town
like
is a nice factory, a motel, a shack, and a liquor store.
And the liquor store's the only thing that's open.
Yeah, this guy goes back to his shack, and he just has, like, he just fucking eats a bunch of Cheese Whiz. What does he put it on? Bread,
yeah,
right?
Yeah, and he doesn't even do it close to the cracker. He's just, like, going all out, dude.
It's the fucking scene in a Goofy movie, it's but, so like, gross. In real life.
That was the grossest part of the movie, was the Cheese Whiz.
Yeah, this guy eats a fucking mountain of Cheese Whiz, and then gets accosted by two of the, like, robots that work for the Silver Shamrock Company, who, I told you when we were watching, I was convinced that they were going to make him suck their dick. Because they make
him robot dick.
Well, they make him like get on his knees. And yeah, I was like, yeah. And they're gonna make this dude suck their dicks. This is crazy.
Yeah, and the way he's twisting his body to like, you know, cork his head off it.
Well, he starts like rubbing the back of the guy's head, and I was like, oh man, they're really gonna make this guy suck his dick.
Yeah, yeah. I was just waiting for the like the sound of the zipper.
Yeah.
But it was really
like, what the fuck?
And the other guy's just making sure he's not moving.
Yeah.
He's got his arms crossed.
Yeah, and then of course Dr. Dan starts fucking Ellie so quickly. Like, comes back into the motel and she comes out of the shower and she's like, I know we both wanted this or something. Or
some corny line like that. But the fact is, he has sex with her twice before asking how old she is.
I don't even remember.
He's like, wait. He's like, this chick's inside him. He's like, wait.
How old are you? Yeah. Excuse me.
And then it's revealed that she's a lot older than he thinks. So, you know, all good.
Case closed. Yeah. Close call.
Yeah, and that's during the scene where that's another woman from that whole scene with the
Oh yeah. The woman who's staying
at
the hotel.
You know, this place is a zoo. Yeah, she's there for, she's like a business trip as well, and she's staying at the hotel.
Yeah, all these people want to take a tour of a mask factory. We're all here for the factory.
What's your secret?
I mean, look, the factory is pretty cool. In all fairness, like, I would definitely enjoy.
Yeah.
A tour of that factory.
It's
but
the same factory they used, the soundstage where they used for Assault on Precinct 13.
Oh, that's right. Yeah.
And the fog.
And the gas stations from the fog.
Yeah, so it's like a big little things like that. All the tie-ins I'm such a sucker for.
Yeah. That woman has like, this scene where she is looking at the Silver Shamrock, I thought it was Pogs. I thought they were Pogs at first. It's like a little coin thing, and she sees that it has
this little microchip.
It's like a microchip.
She's like, what's this? Yeah, I don't know. She's trying to like rewire it or something, but she fusses with it, and you know, we know the potential. We know the power of this Stonehenge from a default attachment to the back of the mask, which ironically, funny enough, is that the woman who gets her face lasered through in the very next room where Dr. Dan is having sex with Ellie. That's his real wife in real life. It's just
honey,
like,
I need you to come down and do a cameo.
It's a beautiful tie-in.
Dude, that scene is amazing too, because it's like they hear the like laser go off or whatever it is in the other room, and it cuts to them and he's literally in the middle of sucking this chick's titty. And he looks up and goes, she looks up and goes, what was that? And he goes, who cares?
Dude, you called that.
What's that?
Who cares?
Yeah, so like somehow they keep stumbling into this conspiracy. They end up at the factory where they find her father's car.
Yeah, which is like, they don't even cover it all the
Why
way.
Why did they keep his car?
Yeah, what are they going to do with
it? Yeah, it seems like they don't even need it. It's like not even a nice car.
Yeah, maybe it's another car that they want to blow up.
Yeah, she's like, wait, that's my dad's car.
And then she starts walking towards the garage.
Yeah.
And like, I'm just going to call them suits.
Yeah.
Like the Matrix guys, and Dr. Dan doesn't do anything. He's like, oh, I'm not going to fight all these dudes.
I don't know. They're just doing their job, honey. Yeah. Let's go back to the motel.
Let's get a drink.
I'm thirsty. Yeah, he's like, you can, he almost looks like he's like coming, he's going through withdrawals during the daytime at the factory because he hasn't had a drink yet. He's like, he's just like burnt out on it. He's like, all right, we got to get out of here. And then, yeah, that family with the annoying kid is doing the tour, and then they use them as like a...
Yeah, this is the presentation of the power that, this tune has. Yeah. You know, the flashes of the pumpkin in the screen that will eventually activate the chip in the back of the mask.
Well, okay, so this is where I got confused, and this is what we kind of talked about last time, was they had me up into the point of like, okay, cool, this is like a commentary on like, you know, literally, you know, like they have the kid sitting right in front of the TV and like literally like TV rotting your brain or whatever, and the idea of like subliminal messages being consumed by this generation of kids that are growing up like this. But yeah, what kind of threw me was the fact that it's killing all the kids that wear the masks, and it like turns their heads into like this, like a swarm of like snakes and maggots and yeah, it's disgusting. Yeah. So that's where I was kind of thrown, because I was like, okay, I know you're not supposed to overthink all of this, but I think it's like any movie like this, especially with horror, like when you set up the rules of something and you're kind of introducing a kind of expository idea of what the evil plan is.
Yeah.
So I didn't understand, like, because it basically feels like they're killing their clientele as opposed to just brainwashing them and turning them into like kind of like a Village of the Damned Body Snatchers type of thing where they're brainwashed.
I mean, I took it as like, I mean, and I don't know the clear cut answer.
Yeah.
But I thought it's like, it would just make Connell more powerful that he's like consumed all this power through the Stonehenge.
Right.
And then by killing all these people, maybe, I mean, the guy seems to be on top of the world already.
I run this town.
By having a very successful business.
But yeah, I guess that's what I was just kind of confused. I was like, I don't, like, who is he going to have left to buy his product? But like, it's not really about, I guess that's kind of what feels like it's at odds, because it's a kind of saying like, well, it's not about the money, but it's about, you know, the control. But he relinquishes the control of all of this once he kills the people that are consuming his product. So
yeah, I mean, it's a little wonky. Is a little bit of brainwashing in a way.
Totally. Yeah, absolutely.
I think that with the insects and the snakes, I think that's more effective than having blood seep out the sides.
Yeah, no, for sure. No, it's a great visual.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, even the woman in the hotel, like as soon as she dies, there's crickets coming out of her mouth and you're like, where the fuck did this come from? But it's gross.
Listen, I don't know what's going on here, but this is fucked up. And I did want to talk about the score, which obviously is iconic. Carpenter has made pretty much nothing but bangers far as scores are concerned.
He's got a vinyl on pre-order right now. Lost Theme. Lost Theme, yeah, 3. Dude. Yeah, him and Alan Haworth. They've collaborated on a ton of his films, you know,
right.
Escape from New York, Christine, Big Trouble in Little China.
Right.
You know, you start the movie and it's just like this piercing synth. I guess in a way that draws my, like, all my attention to that.
Right.
Similar to when children watch that commercial.
Right.
So I'm tuned into the movie already.
You got me.
Yeah, you got me.
I'm buying.
Yeah, I wasn't bored of the opening credits. Right, right. It's like, right. You know, it reveals that this pumpkin is essentially what is going to be the downfall of all these children. It's just like, you know, you open with this man running from his life, and that score, that tempo, maintains those beats. And I think it's a good way to set the tone for the rest of the movie.
Right, right. It's a great fucking score. I mean, it's probably...
It carries the movie.
I want to say it's the best Halloween score, at least.
Oh, yeah.
It's hands down the best Halloween score. I mean, and as far as, like, overall Carpenter scores, I mean, we talk about, like, the Fog score is maybe...
I mean, it's beautiful.
Which is funny, because The Fog is probably one of my least favorite Carpenter movies, but it might have his best score.
Yeah, another Tom Atkins film.
Yeah.
Oh, but and the director is in that film as well. He's the radio announcer, Tommy Lee Wallace.
That's right. Yeah, Tommy Lee Wallace, who directed this, he was an editor for Halloween. He was an editor for The Fog, correct?
Yeah.
Yeah.
So yeah, production designer and co-editor.
Yeah, so he kind of worked behind the scenes and you know, was able to make this his directorial debut. And then, yeah, and then it's shot by Dean Cundey, who is a guy that, funny enough, it came up in conversation when I was talking to Jake, who just shot some really iconic stuff in the 80s and 90s that I totally forgot about. I mean, he did the Back to the Future movies, Jurassic Park.
Dude, the bangers, man.
Yeah.
He's done some great stuff. I mean, he did the first three Halloween movies.
Right.
He did The Fog. He did Psycho 2.
Fuck yeah.
Who Framed Roger Rabbit, which is a fantastic film.
First movie I ever saw.
Dude, it's so good. I still have my first Roger Rabbit toy that I ever got. Right. I love that. That movie's amazing.
Why, Cochran? Why? Do I need a reason? Mr. Kupfer was right, you know. I do love a good joke, and this is the best ever. A joke on the children. But there's a better reason. You don't really know much about Halloween. You thought no further than the strange custom of having your children wear masks and go out begging for candy. Halloween, the festival of Samhain. The last great one took place 3,000 years ago when the hills ran red with the blood of animals and children. Sacrifices are part of our world, our craft.
Witchcraft.
To us, it was a way of controlling our environment. It's not so different now. It's time again.
I do want to go through some critics.
Even though
we talked about this last time, but
still got my fun facts.
Fun facts are coming, baby. So talking about critics, Roger Ebert, when this came out, he said this is one of those identikit movies assembled out of familiar parts from other better movies. What's Cochran's plan? Kill the kids and replace them with robots? Why? Stacey Nelkin is the one saving grace of the film. She has one of those rich voices that makes you wish she had more to say and in a better role. Too bad she plays her last scene without a head. Eric D. Snyder said, were it not for the middle 30 minutes, which take approximately 73,000 hours to watch, forgetting it would be easy. At the time, Vincent Canby of the New York Times went to bat for it and said this movie features a lot of carefully executed, comically horrible special effects. Mr. Wallace clearly has a fondness for the cliches he is parodying, and he does it with style. The film manages the not easy feat of being anti-children, anti-capitalism, anti-television, and anti-Irish all at the same time. Perfect summation, I feel like, of that movie. It hates everything.
That's okay.
Yeah. And Scott Tobias at the AV Club recently did a kind of retrospective of it and said, once the action shifts to the dead-eyed denizens of Santa Mira, the remote town that Silver Shamrock calls home, the film becomes a sly and creepy indictment of corporate engineering. It's not what Halloween fans wanted, and Wallace rubs it in by showing a couple of clips from the original film on TV, but take the Halloween part away, and Season of the Witch is a standalone oddity worth considering on its own terms.
Yeah, and they do a playoff of the tagline from the first one. In the Halloween, it's the night he comes home. Yeah. Season of the Witch is the night no one comes home.
Everybody dies. Yeah, no, it has this very nihilistic bent to it.
It's great.
But it is one of the higher rated movies in the series.
Well, like I said, I have the unpopular opinion of thinking that this is the best in the franchise.
You think it's better than the original? Like the first one?
Yeah. Because
I dig it.
Just steers away from the the slasher genre.
Yeah.
And it holds its own with horror, witchcraft, science fiction. It blends all those elements together to give you this beautiful piece of art.
Something that we talked about last time that we really loved were you had a lot of fun facts.
I do have a lot of fun facts.
You did your fucking homework, man.
Yeah. So after I found all these fun facts, I rewatched the movie again, and I just loved it that much more, knowing
the
all the little details. Yeah.
This movie's so much better when you know the fun facts.
Yeah. So now, when I go into any movie, if there's no fun facts, I'm not watching it.
Listen, there's no fun facts, no thank you.
Yeah, I mean, we have Tommy Lee Wallace, who provided the uncredited voice work as the Silver Shamrock commercial announcer.
That's right.
Dr. Dan's wife, played by director Tommy Lee Wallace's real wife.
Yeah.
Who happens to be in all three of the Halloween films.
Amazing. You talked about the gas station being the same, the factory's the same set from Assault on Precinct 13. That's where they really made the masks. And then you had Jamie Lee Curtis. It was a big family affair, so it does feel like this is the Jay and Silent Bob Strike Back of Halloween movies. This is the little Nicky of Halloween.
Another great Halloween movie. And Tom Atkins had pneumonia for most of the shoot.
That's
so
fucking crazy.
So all those sex scenes, I can't imagine.
This guy is... I mean, that probably added to why he looks so fucked up the whole time, dude.
He crushed it.
Did anyone else get sick from his pneumonia? He didn't.
That I'm not sure.
The original choice to direct this was pretty rad.
Yeah, man. Carpenter himself.
But there was somebody else after Carpenter. So Carpenter was developing it. He wanted it to be a spinoff. He wanted it to start that new anthology.
Well, he reached out to a fellow screenwriter that he had admired for a long time, Nigel Neal from the UK.
Right. Well, yeah, because they based a lot of the kind of witchcraft and stuff on his stories, but they did offer Joe Dante They offered him the job to direct it. He was the original choice. He turned it down.
There's three writers on this film, but only Tommy Lee Wallace is the only one
that got
credit.
He takes the sole credit, yeah.
Which he has said in many interviews he thinks is ridiculous, so...
It's a great vibe movie, too, man. I think it's just, it's got such a cool vibe to it.
Yeah, it's fun. It's fun. Having a...
It's fun to watch the children die.
You don't root for the guy, but you're like, I see where he's getting at, you know?
He's horny.
He just wants to get laid. And
It's the only mainstream horror movie that has made a divorce guy the main character of a movie, which is pretty impressive. Yeah, the movie has received more of a following over the years and kind of a resurgence. Academics find the film full of critiques of late 20th century American society. Historian Nicholas Rogers points to an anti-corporate message where an otherwise successful businessman turns oddly irrational and seeks to promote a more robotic future for commerce and manufacture. Cochrane's astrological obsession or psychotic hatred of children overrode his business sense.
Well, to piggyback off that quote, I have a quote from Don Post, who created the shape mask for Halloween.
Right, right.
And I think he had an interesting take on the mask after molding the latex mask for Season of the Witch.
Yeah.
He says, every society and every time has had its mask that suited the mood of the society, from the mask ball to clowns to makeup. People want to act out a feeling inside themselves, angry, sad, happy, old. It may be a sad commentary on present-day America that horror masks are the best sellers.
Yeah. Who would you say the MVP is of Halloween 3 Season of the Witch?
Oh, man. Well...
Tom Atkins. You know it's me. You know what I did.
I'm horny.
I mean, I think I'm going to go with Carpenter just because I think that it still has his fingerprints on it. The score is just an all-timer.
Yeah, I agree.
And he was the one who wanted to move in a different direction, you know? Like, he
Yeah.
He took it.
Yeah, him and Deborah Hill. This was definitely their baby.
Yeah.
So I guess Carpenter for the win.
Yeah, I mean, although I think Dean Cundey's a close second. I think Dean Cundey did some fucking really great work on this.
Yeah.
Final rating. You think it's a masterpiece, don't you?
I'm going to have to say this is a Halloween masterpiece.
I mean, look, as far as a Halloween movie, yeah, I'll go with you on that. I think it's, I'm going to say pretty good. I'm going to say, I was torn. I think at first I was like, this is so bad it's good in a way. Like it had a cult classic vibe at it where I was like, man, mostly just because I was fucking fascinated by how just awful
I think Tom Atkins when he read the script, I'm pretty sure he was felt the same way. He's like, wow,
this guy sucks.
Really don't care about my family or my job.
What's my motivation in the scene? You're gonna suck a titty. You're gonna like it. Yeah. You gotta find out who killed this woman's dad so that she can get over her grieving so you can fuck her.
Dude, the first phone call he has with his wife at the hospital, she's yelling at him and he like, you know, covers the phone and goes, oh, my ex-wife.
I think it's fun. I love how much you love it. That always is great. I think when you watch them with somebody and they really love something, it can be kind of contagious. And, you know, I think it's a fun way to watch it. If you're going to watch Season of the Witch, watch it with somebody who loves it. Not somebody you love, but somebody who loves Dr. Don. Next week, really in a few days after this episode is released, we're going to be doing a special election episode. We're going to be talking about two election-themed films. We're going to be talking about Chris Rock's Head of State that he directed and stars in with Bernie Mac. And we're also going to be talking about Oliver Stone's controversial W, starring Josh Brolin as George W. Bush. Sean, thank you so much for coming back for round two.
Thank you for reliving it. I really appreciate it. It's an honor to be a part of this podcast.
Everybody deserves a second chance.
Even Dr. Dim.
That's right.
Where's my beer?
God damn it. No, seriously, thank you so much. Love talking to you every day about movies in our living room. So thank you for walking 10 feet into my bedroom to discuss this. Please come back.
Thank you, man.
We love having you. We want to have you back soon. So to our listeners, you know the drill. Follow us on Instagram. Follow us on Twitter. Go on Apple Podcasts. Write a really nice review. Give us 5 stars. Thank you for listening. We'll see you next week for more Rotten Rewind.
Stop it now. Turn it off. Stop it. 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 Stop it.